Welcome to the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving. We provide education and information on senior care topics. Here's your host, Ryan McInniff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving. We give you information and education on senior care topics. My name is Ryan McInniff. I am here with Janet. We're probably laughing because we've been huffing oil for the last week and a half.
Why is the doorbell ringing?
The doorbell's ringing because in the hallway next to one of our neighbors is the doorbell, the other cellar dweller that's down here.
Yeah.
But when you ring his doorbell, it rings in here. The doorbell ring is in here.
Okay.
So that's one of the wonderful gifts that we have. Being in Lexington and in this building. But anyways.
We digress.
I don't know if it could be picked up with a microphone, but there was a big dinging. Anyway. Phones off. Cell phone off. Perfect. Now we're ready because you know it would ring.
Yeah, we're on.
Shannon, what the heck are we talking about today?
We're talking about urgent care and where it all fits in this bigger scheme of things. And I had shared with you, there was something in one of the local papers about, you know, this group got together and they're going to figure out how they're going to save gazillions of dollars in what they consider avoidable emergency visits.
Yes, we've in the private home care industry and in any home care industry, everybody is heard about reducing readmission rates. That's the big thing. Readmission rates. We don't want them. We want them you want them as low as humanly possible. Do you want to give an overview of what these readmission rates mean and where they came from and all that stuff?
Well, readmission rates are in an effort to have hospitals and the healthcare people be more responsible, so they thought, for the care. They have implemented rules and guidelines so that the thought is not to send people home so soon that they turn around and come back to the hospital. So they actually impose penalties. So if someone is admitted to the hospital and then they go home and then they come back 2 days later because of the same problem, the hospital can be fined for a readmission. So that's in the simplest form what happens. As a result, you see some things like sometimes it takes longer when someone goes to the emergency room, like you're there for hours or in a bed or whatever, and maybe they have you there for observation, because until they admit you, they're not under the structure that they will get fined if they send you home and you come back. So there's that part of it, but there's also the idea of what can they do to keep people at home, which is where companies like ours can be very beneficial, because you've got people watching fall risks and assisting with certain things, and there are some equipment, some devices in the home called telehealth. We could do a whole podcast on telehealth. But the idea is that when someone comes home from the hospital, they stay home.
Absolutely. And we obviously talked about this a little bit on a previous podcast in which we had that gentleman that had Alzheimer's that ended up being in a hospital for months and months because he was abandoned and there was no need for him to be in a hospital setting, in a medical setting, because he needed no medical help. But because his mind was gone because of dementia, there was nowhere else to place him for the time being, so the hospital kept the burden of that. And that's a good example of, you know, hospitals being used for situations that they don't necessarily need to be, where home care is very beneficial.
Exactly.
So one of the things, and all this stuff came back when Obama did his health care bill, I can't remember, whatever it was, Obamacare, American Care Act, whatever it was.
The Affordable Care Act.
Affordable Care Act. That was a way to try to reduce the amount of readmissions, thus reducing the amount of Medicare and Medicaid paid for people, because they should have gotten better the first time around at the hospital, at the skilled nursing facility, than taking them in, you know, slapping a Band-Aid on it and getting them back out there. And so because of this, the part of the aim is twofold, especially as this country seems to be irking forward a single-payer healthcare system, is that if you go that route, as we all know, it's going to cost huge amounts of money. How are we going to lower the costs that we already have, one, and then ideally, if it ends up being a single-payer healthcare system, lowering overall costs for everybody. So that is why readmission rates are such a huge focus, because the vast majority of health insurance needs, regardless if you're privately paid for or you have a private health insurance or you have Medicare, all the money spent in the last 2 years of your life. That's where the vast crux
huge
of
amount.
It. And so how do we lower those costs for older adults that are frequent flyers, as we call them, going back and forth to hospitals? And this is where this coalition, if you will, is trying. So,
yeah, and this coalition is a group of employers that are trying to figure out how to manage their healthcare dollars and try and get their premiums down to manage what's going on. And so they're looking at emergency rooms, and the ERs, or they're not fondly called ERs anymore. I think that was because of the TV show. Now they call them EDs. They're back to emergency departments instead of ERs. But it'll change back again.
Spend more time figuring out how to lower costs and worry about the name of your
department. You go. And now what they're finding is there's a couple of things that there are patterns, and that's what they're looking for. And, you know, some of the patterns are the fact that, folks that don't have a doctor, so every time they have a problem, they go to the emergency room, which is the most expensive way to take care of your sniffles. And then there's also, like you were saying earlier, the frequent flyers, and how do you manage that? And one of the things that is a burgeoning industry, if that's the word, are these urgent cares.
And we've talked about urgent cares before and some of the positive things we think about them.
Right, and they were, in the article, they were referring to how the urgent cares could be an option to reduce some of these costs. And the two areas that were the highest, what they considered inappropriate uses of the emergency room, one was dental pain, which was interesting, and another one that's way up there is urinary tract infections, which is near and dear to everybody that deals with the elder industry.
Yep.
And not to mention, if you've got dementia involved, the emergency room, and we've talked about it many times, is not a cool place.
Well, the emergency room is not a cool place for anybody, but especially an elderly person who has a weaker immune system and is going into a place where there are loads and loads of sick people.
Oh.
Not exactly the combination that you want for a healthy, happy elderly person.
And bright lights and too much stimulation, and it just can freak people out. So in looking at that, I imagine many of our clients with urinary tract infections and them going off to the urgent care. And I have to confess, I've not been to an urgent care, so I don't know exactly what the experience is like.
But, it's a great experience.
Well, is it really?
Yes.
Good. What makes it so good?
I went to the one down right next to Walgreens.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk in. You can go online and you can pick a time to go in. And, you know, you just pick your time. Every time I've gone there's been nobody in there. And I had a cut on my foot that had gotten infected, and I just wanted to get some antibiotics. So instead of calling up your primary and waiting around for that, and it's a week and a half, you just go in there and they give you the what you need, and they can check your blood pressure. They can give you a basic physical if you need that. And then you walk out of there and you're usually in and out of there in half an hour or less.
Well, there you go. And I thought, just from what I'd heard, that that's the way they all are. And apparently that's not necessarily the case.
Well, I'd imagine not.
And it was interesting because I then started looking into urgent cares, thinking about elderly people, because you do want to keep them out of the emergency room. And in the article, it was saying how there are many specialists that work with aging people, and they themselves don't know what these centers can and cannot provide. So I went digging in to try and get some information. And
investigative journalism.
Investigative journalism. Yes, and one article I was looking at in the I forget the name of. I just want to give proper credit. Aging Today was the name of the article, and it's part of the American Society on Aging, and they put this little thing together that is called the ABCs of Urgent Care, and I learned quite a bit. And it was saying one of the problems is the name, urgent care, because it's not necessarily urgent care. Like if your leg has been practically cut off, it's urgent to you, but that's not where you want to go. You want to go to an emergency room. That's considered a generic name. But it's for non-life-threatening conditions. And they refer to non-emergencies, non-life-threatening, and they talk about things that need immediate attention that a doctor or nurse practitioner, sprained ankles, cut finger, sore throat, sinus, urinary tract infections. So I said, ha-ha, I will read on. But what was interesting is there's no standard protocol that determines what conditions an urgent care should or should not take care of. And not all centers have a physician on duty all the time. And they're generally open evenings and weekends, but they're not required to be open 24/7, like an emergency room. And they do say that their record is 80% of the clients are seen within an hour or less. So that's kind of getting to your I was in and out in 20 minutes kind of thing. The article was saying how it is good for a number of people because they don't have the anxiety of when you walk into the emergency room, it means you're going to be admitted. And as we know, our population, they're terrified of going to the hospital.
Yep.
They think next step's the nursing home and they're never coming back. But what I found out was that some health plans, you have to know what your insurance is, because some health plans are connected with certain urgent care. And if you go to an urgent care that's not approved by that health plan, it can be considered like out of network. So you end up with a higher copay or an issue with coverage. So if you have an urgent care that's near your home or whatever, you should go check it out and find out if it's on your health plan.
Yeah.
Be a little
proactive. And wouldn't one
proactive.
Think that the people there would let you know up front that this is going to be covered by health insurance? Like, usually when you go to a doctor's office, regardless if it's urgent care or specialist or a primary, you know, they ask you for your insurance card to make sure that it's covered. So that would be kind of, I would feel pretty upset if I went to an urgent care, gave them my insurance card, and then found out that they don't accept my insurance and didn't let me know about that up front.
Or they'll charge you more.
Or they will charge me more because it's out of network. But I guess, you know.
Well, this is where I'd say you and I can probably go in and fend for ourselves, but me looking at the dark side as I do with these things, I'm imagining
an 80-year-old, 85-year-old, 90-year-old woman, male, elderly person.
Or some out-of-state family member said, take mom to the urgent care. So here we have the caregiver and the unsteady client going in there, and she's all whooped up, and now it's not a good situation.
Makes sense.
Also, with an emergency room, they are required to provide care regardless of ability to pay. That's not true about urgent care centers.
No.
They are not required to do that. However, they cannot discriminate for race, gender, religion, or any of those kind of things. So, and then I just did one other little piece of information because I was getting curious about these things. And I felt like I was one of our potential clients on the phone when they'll call up and say, what do you do? And they'll say, are you certified? And they don't even know what it means, but they know they're supposed to ask that. Apparently, there's two different categories of urgent cares. They can be certified or they could be accredited. And the difference between the two is that if it's certified, they define what they do.
Mm-hmm.
If they're accredited, it means that somebody checks out their safety, their quality, and their scope of practice.
So you want an accredited one over a certified.
So you would prefer an accredited one. And so I just, it was interesting because it was so much like what people are asking about private care.
Yeah.
And, you know, knowing the questions to ask and having some sense of what that place is all about. And you can go online and find out what's near you, and you can look up to find out if they're accredited or not. And just like you tell We encourage clients to have that 3x5 card or whatever that's got all the meds on it and who's the doctor. You got to put on there, where's the urgent care that they could go to? And it would make life easier.
Yeah, it totally does. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, some of these issues, urinary tract infections, stomach or back pain, or, you know, whatever, rashes or whatever it might be, those are all areas where you can easily go to an urgent care, save yourself some time, aggravation, and sickness about being around people that are truly sick. I mean, in the article that I was looking at, there, and this is more specific to Massachusetts, but it doesn't matter because I would be willing to bet that it's relatively, if it's happening in Massachusetts, it's happening everywhere else.
Yeah. And certification isn't required in any state in Massachusetts. So you don't even need certification.
In any state in Massachusetts?
In any state in the U.S.
In the U.S.
Oh, in the U.S., yeah.
For urgent cares. Yeah. Well, I was going to go back just quickly to talk about the readmission rates just for a moment. And it was interesting because you have, just like anything, you have two sides, two associations that disagree. And I thought this was great. This made me so. It was like the nurse vote in Massachusetts where, you know, they had such wildly different numbers on what adding, like, you know, X amount of nurses to the each floor
right.
was going
to
cost.
No.
And one was like, it only costs like $50 million a year. And another one's like, oh, our number's like $900 million a year.
Yeah.
But anyways, this said that there's one of the reasons there's a dispute on just how many ED visits are avoidable. A new coalition using research from the Health Policy Commission, HPC, puts that number at 42%, or nearly a million visits a year. Again, this is in Massachusetts. So this one's saying a million visits a year. But the American College of Emergency Physicians says it's only 3.3% of visits which are avoidable, and most of those are dental problems and mental health issues being the most common. So you have emergency physicians, basically association, where their jobs are dependent on the emergency room, saying it's only 3.3%. And then obviously a health policy commission saying it's 42%. So if you asked Ryan, I'd probably put that number in the 25 to 30% of admissions are avoidable, which is still a large percentage of numbers, but it's not anywhere close to being a majority percentage as the Health Policy Commission says. So, I mean, but when you think when you're in, you know, these places like major cities like Boston or LA or Chicago or Miami or Denver, any of these major cities, you know, whether it doesn't matter what state you're in, you know, every day some of these places see thousands of people. And you know, you think about 30% of those people don't even need to be there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would put a big amount of, take a lot of pressure off of that emergency room staff and the budgeting and all of that stuff that would occur. And you know, if you can manage to get somebody to go to an urgent care rather than waiting for 3 or 4 hours in an emergency room, and the care is just as good in the sense that usually they're giving you antibiotics or they're giving you some pills or whatever it might be.
Yep.
And then I can also see, going back to the urgent care, why it's so popular. Think about this. I don't know what the money aspect is, so I have no idea what the cost difference is. But just think about it. Would you rather be working from 8 in the morning to 6 o'clock at night and going home at an urgent care, or would you rather be working the graveyard shift at a hospital? Now, I imagine the hospitals probably pay more money because they earn more money and they have huge amounts of revenue going through there. But at some point in time, there are people that might just say, you know what, this is a lot easier, or it's a perfect area for people that are new to the industry and trying to get experience or things like that. So there are going to be pros and cons to it, but I think the scheduling is great. And, you know, I don't think they need to be open 24 hours a day. If something happens at 2 in the morning, you know, that's what the ER visit's for, unfortunately.
Well, funny you should say that, because there was also a chart that was, and this was put together, analysis of the emergency department database in 2015, and they looked at the times where there were the avoidable trips to the emergency room. and it was 22% between 8 a.m. and noon, 23% between noon and 4, 23% between 4 and 8, but it drops off to only like 17% and 14% after 8 p.m. until 8 a.m. the next day.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are using the emergency room at the very same time they could go to an open urgent care.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that it's going to have to be fixed. And, you know, this coalition in Massachusetts says that they're going to hit $100 million in savings by, which is about 20% in 2 years, which, you know,
that's
a very ambitious goal that is very unlikely to happen in my eyes. But, you know, even if you can start cutting away at 3 to 5% a year,
mm-hmm.
3% a year, and then maybe the next year grows to another 5%, so then you're at 8%, and then it grows to, you know another 5% a year, that would be great. But 10% a year enact something, I think, is very ambitious. But at least there's somebody's trying.
Yeah, and then there's the issue of people that are uninsured. I mean, the urgent cares don't take somebody that's uninsured. Well, the emergency rooms by law have to, but the hospitals are losing a fortune doing that. So there's that insurance company side of things of how do you deal with these things, where maybe some of those people would go elsewhere, but they don't have insurance.
Very true.
So
and at least they know that, you know, they can get the care they need even if it's they don't have that insurance. So it's a extraordinarily complicated situation, and at the end of the day we'll see what happens. But urgent cares are here to stay for the time being, and I think they're worthwhile to be utilized. They're by no means perfect, and just like private home care, it's probably such a new industry that it's going to take regulators a little while to catch up to them.
Yep.
But eventually it will happen, and it will go from there.
And if there's one near mom and dad, I suggest, just like if you're looking at assisted living, home care, or anything else, drop by and find out what they're all about.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Shannon, for your investigative journalism. Don't go running off to the Boston Globe spotlight or anything.
No. I'm too happy here.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of the Caregiver's Toolbox, and we will catch you on the next one. Thank you very much. Have a great day.